Time for Wednesday's hour number two on Hashtag Daily K with your host, Peter Bint. Korean dramas, movies, and even lyrics. Why is the world paying attention to Korean stories?
From classics to modern masterpieces, time to dig deep into the charms of Korean literature.
On Check It Out
with Paul.
Every Wednesday at this time, we introduce you into various Korean literature pieces that have been translated into English. And Paul Matthews, our master in the booth, comes and joins us with his fabulous voice to take over from my one that's on its last legs.
It's not a good voice today, Peter.
Thank you so much, Paul, though, for number one, covering last Wednesday.
My pleasure.
Number two, filling in on Sunday.
My pleasure again.
Siska also thanks you for that. And then number three, coming in again, because I couldn't stick to our original recording schedule today.
Such is life. I know what it's like, and I know how difficult it is, especially when you're on the air every single day, and you do get sick. I mean, it's one thing to have a cold.
Yeah.
But it's when you get what we call here in Korea, mokkamgi.
Yes.
Throat cold, where you have a really sore throat, and that leads to laryngitis. It's the worst thing in the world for any broadcaster or performer, because your doctor will tell you, Peter, you need to stop talking.
Yes.
And your producer will tell you, Peter, we have to do a two-hour show.
Yeah, it doesn't quite add up, does it, very well. And the doctor, when I went, straight after I saw you last Wednesday, I went to the doctor's, and he was like, okay, you need to rest your voice.
So yeah.
When do you next need to speak? Because he recognized me from the telly. And I was like, oh, this afternoon. And he just laughed and he said, okay, I'll give you a steroid injection in your butt, but it's not going to help this afternoon. And I went again on Sunday and he was like, yeah, you need to rest. And I was like, okay, I need to do it tomorrow. And he just laughed again.
Yeah, there's nothing much you can do, Peter, apart from talk while you're on the show and then never talk to your wife and children again.
Yeah, I did that for the whole weekend. I was just whispering, because if you whisper, it doesn't use the same vocal cords, I feel.
No, it doesn't. It's a little bit easier on you.
It was not as effective.
No.
When telling off the kids.
Of course not.
I was like,
Gio.
Yes. You thought I was just being cute or something like that. Anyway.
But at least you can make an ASMR podcast.
I could. It does sound a bit creepy, though, I must say.
Well, you always sound a bit creepy, Peter.
That is also very, very true. Thank you, Paul. Are you doing well in the middle of May? The 15th today is Buddha's birthday and Sasanganan, or Teacher's Day.
It is a double whammy. We don't get this too often because Buddha's birthday moves around on the lunar calendar and Teacher's Day is pretty much fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting one to have the 2 days at once.
Isn't Buddha like a teacher as
well?
Well,
that's the thing. It feels like they're meant to go together. And no offence to anybody who's not Buddhist,
of course.
I don't mean it. And we should remember that Buddhism is very, very open to other religions as well.
Yes.
Is that, yes, Buddha was a teacher and religious heads, be they monks or priests or imams or whoever they may be, they are teachers. And, well, it's a good day to thank our teachers, whoever they are. And I think it's another good day, because it's Teachers' Day, to remember that our teachers are not necessarily, in quotation marks, our teachers.
Of course, yeah. Anyone can teach you something about life, can't they? Even little kids. I want to put this question to you then, Paul.
Yeah.
Memorable teacher, good or bad? Let's go for one each, in fact.
Okay, and we go for one each.
Who was a really bad teacher in your life?
I think Mr. Swift, if I remembered him right.
Okay.
He was my maths teacher
when
I was in secondary school.
What was bad about Mr. Swift?
He had no personality.
Uh-huh.
He had no teaching skill in terms of charisma or getting students excited.
Yeah.
He obviously didn't really like me. It does not make for a good mix.
No, especially in something like mathematics, where if you're not interested in the subject, you need a great teacher to get you interested. You know, when I was at school for the longest time, I didn't realise that. I didn't think it was a teacher's job. And maybe it's not. Maybe we're being greedy to get you interested in the subject.
But it is. It is right? A teacher's job. Part of being a teacher, I think, is doing your best to find a way to make what you're teaching accessible and interesting, and also being able to spark curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't necessarily do that with every single child, because there will be kids who you cannot click with no matter how hard you try. But generally speaking, you have to find a way into your class to make them love this learning process and follow along with you. Because if you don't, it's going to be terrible for you and terrible for them.
Yeah, you just go through the motions. And I have to say, I think for me, the majority of my teachers were in that kind of category, just going through the motions, yeah. like textbook in front of them, blackboard, and just blah, blah, blah. They maybe crack a joke here and there, but they wouldn't try and get the whole thing engaging. And yeah. so when I came across teachers like that, I really appreciated that. And I thought, that's what a teacher should be.
Exactly. And I have to say, the teachers I've loved in my life have been those who had a certain something
yeah.
about them that made you want to talk with them, that made mm-hmm. you want to engage with them, that made you want to listen to them.
Yeah.
So I think, for example, I will say, shout out to Mr. and Mrs. Whiteley.
Oh, there's a double.
Yeah, the husband and wife. Uh-huh. Mr. Whiteley was the chemistry teacher in Japan.
Okay.
And Mrs. Whiteley was the English teacher. I only
wow.
had Mrs. Whiteley.
Okay.
She was a fantastic English teacher. She was mad as a hatter at times, but really passionate.
Wow.
She also directed the school play we were doing, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Amazing.
And she was really good at that. And I used to babysit for them.
Oh,
and then
wow.
we used to have a few beers together afterwards.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, legally speaking, perhaps not so wise. But the point is, they understood what it needs to connect with kids, mm-hmm. and connect with teenagers especially, which is really hard.
Yeah.
And I think the previous year we'd had a very stiff upper lip British English teacher
uh-huh.
Who we didn't necessarily get on with so well. But when she came along, suddenly yeah. it was like... Okay, this is how we can do it.
I think that's half the journey, the half the battle. If you are enthusiastic about what you're teaching, that really comes across, right?
It does, but that said, I know it's really hard for some teachers because if you're a new teacher, it's all very exciting. But if you're in a school where there are restrictions and difficulties and work issues,
yeah.
and you're teaching the same syllabus year after year after year, okay. it can be very draining.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate that it is a very, very tough job, and we shouldn't forget that. But at the same time, we know that the best teachers are the ones who are able to bring that little bit of magic to their class.
That is a very good point. Teachers should be better rewarded in order to motivate them.
Well, generally speaking, anyone who works in terms of caring for children, or works for caring for society, whether
yeah.
you're working with children or whether you're working in a hospital or whether you're working with those who need support of some kind, you should be paid better than everybody else, quite frankly, because you're
yeah.
doing a really difficult emotional job. And unfortunately, they don't get paid enough.
No. So I guess because we broadcast to kids as well, we should maybe get paid more. Is that the message?
Well, I get paid more in other jobs. Let's just say that.
Just to make things fair then, because it is Teacher's Day. For Buddha's Day, favourite bodhisattva statue?
I'm the one in our house.
You got a little statue.
Yeah, an old friend of mine. Her name is Yoon Sok Nam.
Uh-huh.
She's a very famous feminist artist here in Korea. She's,
wow.
She's had exhibitions all over the world. She's sort of getting into her 80s now.
Uh-huh.
But for our wedding, she actually made us a wooden lady bodhisattva statue.
I was trying
very
to
simple.
Dump you with this question. I don't believe
no.
you have
so
the most amazing answer.
A lady Buddha who sits just opposite our bathroom door. I see her in the corridor every time I come in and leave the house.
Wow.
And she brings an utter peace and calm. It's very simple. There's very few marks on the wood,
uh-huh.
but the face stands out so beautifully. So that is my favourite one.
Wow, that is unbelievable. I wasn't expecting that at all.
I would also say there's a very good one at Bongunsa Temple just around the corner from here.
Check it out. Is that the one down at Coex?
Yes. That's gorgeous standing
temple,
Buddha.
Isn't it? Okay, whatever you're doing today, we hope you enjoy today's book. A bit of poetry.
Yeah, I thought because it's Teacher's Day and it's Buddha's birthday, I'd bring something that can make us be inspired but also make us reflect on life.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to look at an anthology called A Black Kite. It's by Kim Jong-il. It's translated by Brother Anthony of Taizé, who we know as An Sonje sometimes
uh-huh.
as well, and also translated in some poems by the author himself.
Oh, wow, interesting. Okay, A Black Kite, that doesn't sound so positive
no,
to
we're
me.
Talking about the bird.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not a paper kite flying in the sky. We're talking about one of those. We have red kites and black kites, these beautiful birds of prey that hover in the sky and look majestic.
Wow, I remember studying red kites in the UK. I didn't even know there was a black version of
yeah.
this. That's interesting.
They are beautiful. If you've never seen them in the flesh, they are gorgeous. In my
yeah.
hometown, we have red kites, and
yeah.
you can see them on a regular basis. And
yeah.
they are incredible, just hovering high up in the sky. And when you see them swoop down,
yeah.
it's like something out of a, I don't know, something out of a movie.
It is brilliant. Kim Jong-il, is this a poet from back in the day?
Yeah, he was born in Andong in 1926. His pen name is Kim Jong-gil. His actual name was Kim Chi-gyu.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Hewa College, and while he was there, he set up a literary club, managed to make his debut at the age of about 21 as a poet. Then he studied English at Korea University.
Mm-hmm.
The Korean War hit, and he became an interpreter during there, sort of helping the Allied forces, and then became a professor. And he had the most amazing life in the 60s and 70s. He spent time in the UK. He went to the US. He was hanging out with T.S. Eliot.
What?
That incredible British poet, as well as Allen Ginsberg in New York.
Unbelievable.
And what's interesting, he wasn't just writing his own poetry. He was also translating Korean poetry into English. And he was teaching, and he spent a lot of his time as an academic.
Mm-hmm.
But this collection is basically gathering the best poems of his life. Sadly, he passed away at the age of 91 in 2017, and this was published just after his death.
Wow.
So we have a few of his poems that he translated himself, and the rest are translated by Brother Anthony.
I don't think we've ever had a Korean writer hanging out with other esteemed Western writers like this before.
Never. Well, I'm sure they may have done, but this is the case where it's sort of, it's clearly documented, and there's actually, there's a poem or two dedicated to foreign poets who he's hung out with.
Wow, that's amazing. Brother Anthony, unless you're tuning
Anthony!
Unless you're tuning in for the first time, you would have heard him mentioned many times, especially when it comes to poetry.
Yeah, I mean, that was his bag for a long time. He was translating poets. I mean, he just celebrated, I think, his 44th anniversary of arrival in Korea.
Wow.
Arrived back in 1980, spent 44 years here, translated so many volumes of poetry, lots of short stories. He's also nowadays translating a lot more novels, and we featured various historical novels and thrillers as well. And I always say, check out his website. Search for Brother Anthony Korea. You'll find lots of free poetry, lots of free short stories that he's translated. He's a fascinating guy.
Yeah, a lot of it also out of print, so you won't be able to find it easily elsewhere. So the first poem we're going to start off with, what's that?
Well, it's called Spring Mud. I think, are we still in spring, officially?
Yeah, the tail end of it,
It's not feeling quite like spring. I'm already in shorts. But this first poem is called Spring Mud. It's a short one, but it's a good one. The women's university had cream-coloured buildings. The mud stuck to the soles of shoes, did not fall off readily. The end of the suitably gasping hill path was a greenish barley field. There was a sound of a white tennis ball bouncing somewhere. It was too early for cuckoos to be singing, but up on the hill, newly entering students were chattering like skylarks.
That poem, very short, very sweet, Spring Mud.
Yeah.
And there were skylarks in there, harking back to the title of this anthology as well.
Sure. Well, I thought because it's Teacher's Day, we could start off with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a teacher, it's an academic, a professor at the start of the school year.
Mm.
Because spring is where we have our first semester
here in Korea.
Yeah, so it's like the joyful early days of the new semester, but also the new season. And for me, what struck me was the colours, the images of the colours. We have the cream-coloured buildings, then the brown mud, then the greenish barley field, the white tennis ball.
Mm.
It feels like we're witnessing a painting within a poem.
I wonder what does spring mud bring to mind for me, you know? Now I'm an adult, and, you know, I don't step in mud so often.
Yeah.
I've forgotten. But when you're young, you know, you play around in mud and grass a lot of the time. Was there something about spring mud?
It's fresh.
Okay.
It's the mud, it's the rain that signifies the start of the new season. And so this mud is not the old, crusty, nasty winter mud. This is the signs of new birth, of rebirth.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, and what I really like for me, and the reason I think I wanted to do this poem first, is this line, the last line, that up on the hill, newly entering students were chattering like skylarks.
Yeah, it's too early for the real cuckoos to be singing.
Yeah.
And the students are chattering. Yeah, that excitement, right?
It's true. I don't know, Petey, maybe you feel this, maybe you don't. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been around one of the university areas in Seoul recently?
No, not recently. I remember when I was going to Yonsei Language Institute. That was 2010.
Oh, no, but what I mean is as an over 40-year-old man.
Oh, no. I don't know if I'd like that.
Oh, yeah, but it's fascinating. It okay. is weird.
Yeah.
Because suddenly you're surrounded by people, by, I want to say kids, but they're not kids. They're yeah. young adults who yeah. are 20, 21, 22. And they do feel like a different species.
Uh-huh.
They do feel like they're chattering like skylarks. You hear these excited, youthful voices sort of yeah. calling out to each other and doing all this. And it's a feeling, maybe you get it when you take Jew and Ellie to school.
Uh-huh.
And you see all the kids playing in the sure. playground. It's that kind of thing. This is youth. This is spring. This is their chance, yeah. their time, whereas I'm a bit old and crusty, like the mud. I am the spring mud, they are the skylarks.
We're on the sidelines, so to speak. And maybe in some literal senses, they're like chattering skylarks, because there might be lingo that you don't understand anymore yeah. that they're using
well,
as well.
Well, that's the thing. So I think it's a brilliant, very short description that evokes all these things in our heads. And I think if you're my age, or if you're a bit older like Peter, then you can appreciate this. And I've got a feeling that he was writing this as an older professor.
Yeah, maybe not so wistful or longing for his younger days.
No.
But just being accepting.
And I think that's what's great about this collection is there is not this longing for youth. This is, here I am and this is how I'm feeling. And it's a really good reminder. And again, Buddha's birthday, we should be stopping for a second and taking in everything around us and finding the joy in the little things in life rather than just always rushing and rushing and rushing with our head pointed to our phone or pointed to the ground.
Yeah, because this short poem could really be just a moment, right? Just
yeah.
a second in a day. And I feel like in real life, you know, when you're going through your day, you could analyze it like this and be really present, or you could just let it fly by, like
yeah.
you said, phone yeah. in your face and not notice anything.
Exactly. Yesterday, I was walking from my house to Yeonhyeong, a very nice area in Seoul, beautiful weather, and I looked up and I saw the most perfect white cloud in the blue sky.
Yeah.
And I just stopped. And it was only just for a second or two, but it was a gorgeous moment where I just went, this is a good day.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's the point of life kind of thing. If you just take it in, all around you, there is beauty to be had and found. Second poem, what are we going to be hearing here?
Well, this one for me is another philosophical one. I'm interested to see what your take is on this as an older gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
It's called A Bicycle. On a downward slope, I accelerate. I just have to keep my feet on the pedals. But I have to maintain my balance. And something might suddenly come dashing out. I need to be ready for that kind of unexpected event. Still, like this, a peaceful downward slope. Sunlight breaking and bouncing off the spokes. The bell ringing, ting-a-ling. The bottom of the hill growing dark, though still, ultimately expecting to fall off, entrusting myself to inertia quite refreshing. I go rolling down the hill in the autumn sunset, barely keeping my balance, gently applying the brakes.
This feels like more than just a bike ride.
Yeah, for me, it feels like, I'm on my slow descent to possible death.
I didn't want to put it like that.
But it is. It yeah. is. To a certain extent, it is, I think, that ride downhill for the older gentleman like you, Peter.
Thank you.
You've passed your peak.
You know, I didn't really feel it until this laryngitis has come on and you keep shoving it down my throat now. But now I do feel like if life is a hill, then I am on the downward descent.
Maybe you're on the top. Maybe you're sort of coasting along the plateau before you head down next year.
Yeah, but I felt as you were reading that, that sprung to mind for me, you know. You got your feet on the pedals, but you're letting the slope do the work. And
yeah.
And that can sometimes be the comfort of, like, middle age and, you know, being a certain level of success and successful in your life.
Yeah,
so
but,
you're kind of coasting.
But, Peter, something might suddenly come dashing out.
That's exactly the way I feel. Not just with life, but, you know, with your career and everything
yeah,
as well. You never know.
Also right? with your kids.
Yeah.
You know, at this age as well, on the downward slope, your kids are on the way up
yeah.
and they may get into trouble. They may fall off their bikes
yeah.
and you're not ready for that. They may crash into you.
Yeah.
So you've got to be aware of it. But I really like it as this metaphor for life.
Mm.
It's like, keep your balance, gently apply the brakes,
okay,
and everything's going to be okay. Because when we're young, like the Skylarks, we're rushing forward, rushing up the hill. We want to get there, we want to get there, we want to get there.
We don't care if we crash, we can get back up, etc.
Exactly.
Et
but as we get older and more fragile, we're like, oh, it's a downhill slope. I don't want to go too fast.
No.
I just want to enjoy the ride.
Yeah, the peacefulness of it. But, yeah, I've always got in the back of my mind, something might come out and jump out at me while I'm on this slope, and you might have a big or a small accident.
Absolutely.
You know?
And we have to be aware. You can't just coast through life ignorant of what's happening around you. You have to keep your eyes open. But you do at the same time need to enjoy this process. Because after all, what awaits for us is this this sharp drop-off.
Yeah. That hill growing dark, you know. I definitely think the darkness here is that metaphor for death and saying goodbye. But it's that balance, isn't it? Enjoying it, being aware of it.
Yeah.
Being ready for something not going quite right as well, all at the same time.
Exactly. And I think some of our listeners, some of the Adiyang family who are younger will be going, I'm not quite there with you. But
of course.
I think we also have some, you know, members of the Adiyang family who are our age, maybe a little bit older or just a little bit younger, will be going, actually, that's a pretty good metaphor for where we are right now.
Yeah, entrusting yourself to that inertia. I feel like more and more in life as well, I kind of just leave it to the universe a little bit. And I'm
sometimes
happy to
you
do
can.
That, you
know? I think it's really important to be able to let go and to say, okay, what's happening is happening and I'm not going to struggle too much. You go with the flow. You roll with the punches.
Yeah, Benny's saying these poems, this one especially, it's a good way to reflect on maybe your peak and whether you're past it or before it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think with your age, you can kind of feel where you are as well.
I think it should be said that when we talk about peak here, we're just talking physical peak.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you get older, there are other peaks to experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life does not end at 40.
No,
I know you might think that, Peter, but it's not the case. there are things that you can do, but certainly physically speaking, there's a change that happens as we get into middle age for both men and women. It happens in different ways.
Yeah.
There are different experiences, but certainly we all feel it in some way or another.
Absolutely. And it's a nice little contrast with the first poem being Spring Mud. And this one mentioning autumn.
Well, that's why I chose them. Again, this is the Buddha's birthday feeling of that sort of, I don't know, the circle of life or the cycle of the season. Along the stream in front of my former village, the clumps of willow rooted in the gravel, the rows of poplars in the sand, have all vanished. The newly made Imha Lake is spread with multiple watery scales reflecting the autumn sunlight. They say our country changes every 10 years, and while it has changed 7 times, I have grown old, traveling far from home. My home village has been submerged. To that extent, our country has changed so that I and the former landscape cannot recognize each other. Half an evening spent gazing down at the site of the old house where I was born. Spent my childhood. That valley, early subsets of late autumn evenings. Finally back from the rearward mountain ridge, I gaze blankly at the lake before the village, like seeing someone unfamiliar, an unfamiliar landscape.
So this sounds like it's from later in the poet's life. Seven times they've witnessed the country change.
Seven decades, so he's at least 70, if not more.
Feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the sort of poem that makes you want to read it out aloud, maybe not just once, but twice.
Yes.
To really get to the bottom of it.
I don't know. It's kind of linking on to the previous poem. You've chosen these so very well.
I went from spring to autumn to winter to a certain extent. There's no winter here, but it feels like the winter of his life.
Yeah.
It's like the... It's reminding us that we can never truly go home.
Mm-hmm.
Because the home we knew as children or as a younger person, the home that we knew and loved, that no longer exists. It's not there. Even if the building remains, it's not the same.
It's not the same because all that time has passed. And in this case, I'm wondering if he's being literal. You know, his home village has been submerged because there were a few villages that fell victim to that with dams. And
exactly.
Whatnot, right?
I think this is a literal submergement. And so that's why he's talking about it. But it's also a reflection of our own lives and how we feel about when we go visit our parents at our family home, perhaps, or where we go back to the old town where we used to live, and it's not the same.
No, you've changed so much, right? And the place has changed so
much,
so you can't recognise one another.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, Seoul, Korea especially, is such a fast-moving country, a fast-moving city. I mean, recently, my wife has been ill, and so we've been going to hospital, and this feels very personal for me because it's a reminder that we cannot go back to where we were before.
Mm-hmm.
There's no turning back the clock. Yeah. You can't go home. You can only go on to into the future. Mm. You can reflect. You can remember. You can feel nostalgia for the past, but you cannot go back there. The past is a foreign country.
Yeah, this back home concept. I guess, I don't know, we all have a home, you know, wherever we are in life, but it's just not going to be that one from our past, maybe.
Oh, yeah. But we have many homes in life.
That's true. It's,
you know, unless you're one of those people who were born in the same house and die in the same house, there's a good chance you're going to be moving around. And certainly if you get married, if you have kids, that changes again. So I thought all three of these, you know, are very good, not just for Teacher's Day, because it's a teacher writing the poems, but also for Buddha's birthday, because these are reflections on life and how to live, whether we appreciate the moment, whether we appreciate the journey, or whether we remember that we can't go back, and so we have to move forward.
Yeah, always moving forward. But I don't know, Buddhism is about reincarnation, right? It's about the circularity kind of thing.
Yeah, it's also about achieving enlightenment and being present to be in the moment.
Yeah, and I guess we all in this busy 2024 that we live in with all this technology and smartphones and we're doing a stream over here, you just get caught up in all that now, more.
Yeah.
But I don't know, this slower pace with the background music and your voice makes me want to just take a bit of time and sit by a lake and stare out wistfully and wonder and remember past times, you know, my home when I was young and stuff. I don't know if it's a sign of modern times or whether people were always like this, but I find myself very rarely thinking about my childhood these days. You know, very rarely. When I was younger, you know, you'd think back a lot more often.
Yeah.
Maybe it's recency bias, but I just don't go back there anymore. I'd love to, like, wallow in those memories.
Well, I think maybe you have to make time for them, and you have to make time for yourself to be present in the moment.
Right.
I ordered from a dodgy overseas website that's come into Korea now, a very cheap wooden Sudoku set.
Oh, okay. I saw that on your social media. I didn't know it was the very cheap place, the website.
Yeah, but it's fantastic. It's not great craftsmanship. But what it is it's analog. And so it has about 100 different games you can play. But of course, you can get more on the internet.
Yeah.
And you put all the pieces in the right places. And then you do your Sudoku. And then you have to pack it away.
Wow.
And you have to put all the ones next to the ones, all the twos next to the twos. The whole process demands that you be present and demands that you cannot rush.
Mm.
You have to be careful and slow when you set it out. You have to be careful and slow when you solve the Sudoku.
Of course.
And then you have to be careful and slow when you put it away.
Yeah.
And I really like that because it's forcing me to be in that moment and to do something that doesn't rely on technology or anything like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's the point, right? You have to make time for it, whatever it is, reminiscing, doing something like a board game. This past weekend, me and the kids because of my voice. The kids and I, because of my voice. We didn't go anywhere. We were just stuck at home. And we got out a load of old toys with the thought of throwing them away. But we had one last play with like a puzzle set, and I got my daughter to do it. And, you know, she never does puzzles these days. She's always watching the latest K-pop idols, learning their dances and stuff like that. And she sat there, and she took about, 20 minutes. It wasn't a difficult one or anything, but she was really concentrating on it all by herself, like getting lost. She went for a poo in between, TMI.
Everyone goes for a puzzle poo.
And then she came back and she finished it. And I was just like, that's what I want to see. That's the old kind of analog, old school childhood that I had.
But you have to make that happen. That's the thing. It's up to you as a parent to find those opportunities and to not stop your kids from doing what they want to do, but just gently find the time for those moments together.
Yeah, like curating the environment to push people in a certain direction, to take that moment to be present, you know? That's what it's all about.
And I'll say, if you're in Korea today is a perfect day to head to a temple. Just spend a moment in this beautiful calm, probably quite busy because it's Buddha's birthday surroundings. maybe another day when it's calmer, but it's really good. You don't have to be Buddhist to visit a temple.
No.
You don't have to believe to take a moment of reflection there. I really recommend it.
Yeah, and the thing with temples is a lot of them are open like all year round, and you can just wander in and you'll see the signs for them, you know, the Buddhist sign on the street, and then maybe it'll take you up a little way of a mountain or something like that into some nook or cranny. Some of them are completely in urban areas, just a building, like nondescript. Sure. But some of the beautiful ones in the nature, you do feel like you're brought back down to earth, like literally away from like technology and thinking about the future and everything.
I would say near to where Kim Jong-il studied, go and see Gilsangsa Temple, one of the most beautiful temples in Seoul.
Gilsangsa Temple, I don't think I've been there. The one at the COEX is great. There's also one behind Seoul Art Center, just across the road.
It's right up on the hill.
The view over Sochogu and then into north of the river, what do we call that? Kangbuk. It is beautiful.
Did you not remember what we call north of the river where I live?
I was going to say Bukhan. I was like, you can't see as far as North Korea, I don't think. No, you can't get that far with your eyes. Paul, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Taking things back, stripping things back to a slower pace of life. And so could you give us our one-line review for this?
At turns, witty, nostalgic, sad and pastoral, a tribute to the life of a great poet.
It does seem like his very own personal experience, but also something that we can all resonate with as well. Next week, book and more poetry?
No, it's a fantasy novel. Ooh. A Magical Girl Retires by Park Seol-yeon, translated by Anton Hare, came out very recently, so let me know if you've read it.
A Magical Girl Retires, that piques my interest already. Paul, as ever, thank you once again, not just for today's reading, but for holding down the fort and maybe having to do it again in the future. Always appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks to LTI Korea for the help with copyright permission. Thanks to Kim Jong-il for his beautiful poetry and Brother Anthony for his wonderful translation. I'll be back next week with another book. Goodbye!
You can listen to Check It Out with Paul Matthews on Arirang Radio's hashtag Daily K every Wednesday from 10 a.m. KST.